think I did it right. And a light shines down right. from above. And
we
the
are
heavenly chorus. Yeah.
Most favored.
Highly favored right. podcast.
Today, we are God's favorites.
For the next 30 minutes.
Right.
You know what? I'll take it for as long right. as I can get it.
Until we inevitably say something that right. knocks us off the leaderboard.
I give us 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, claiming to be God's favorites. That yeah. probably knocked us off.
It's one of those things you can't say out loud.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but you can't say out loud.
Right. Like, which yeah. child is your favorite? All right. Well, hey, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. This is Pastor David Bowser with me, as always, Elise McCarter.
Still here. Still pretty successful.
And not with us today, Patrick.
Patrick's on vacation.
Is out. Ah, taking yeah. a little, a trippy trip.
Yeah, I like this reason for him to be out normally.
As opposed to when it's normally that he or one of his children is sick.
Sick children, sure. yep.
One of his children was sick earlier this week, and so their vacation was delayed. But they are on vacation now.
Okay,
so,
good.
Yeah. Or at least that was the plan. When he left here yesterday,
they were feeling good about it.
They were moving in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah. Good.
Yeah, stomach bugs, man. They'll knock out a whole family. Yeah. They'll take you down.
Hopefully they stay away from here until that has moved through all of them.
In both literal and figurative
right.
senses.
This too shall pass, as they say.
All right. Well, hey, we're going to get into some questions about the demonic and about therapy and spiritual warfare today. That's where we're going today.
That's
it's
all a surprise to me. That's awesome.
It shouldn't be. That's the article that we sent you.
I didn't know it was about the demonic.
I mean, it's about spiritual warfare. Can you talk about spiritual warfare without talking about the demonic? Who else are you battling if you're...
I don't know. I think, you know, never mind. We'll get into it in a little bit. We've got news to talk about first.
Okay. Well, let's get into the news. What you got for us?
So.
You gave me homework. I didn't do a good job on my homework.
It's okay. I did your homework for you.
Okay, I love this.
I know.
It's like being in middle school. That's not true. I did other people's homework for them. Yeah.
You're still God's favorite right now.
That's
so
right.
I did your homework for you.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. I ran across this article today when tasked with finding a funny news story.
Bravo.
I think it's funny. I don't know if it's really funny.
Great setup.
I know. In the way that maybe we're accustomed to. But I thought, stop it.
It's not funny in the way we're accustomed to? What does that even mean?
Like, you're not being a good co-host right now.
I'm being a great co-host.
But I thought it could start a conversation for us that was both weird and titillating, perhaps.
Okay, so we're anticipating the article itself not being the funny, but us bringing the funny.
We're going to bring the funny.
Okay.
The article, it's weird, and it's a conversation starter.
I love that.
If you need a fact for a party to start a conversation,
you know,
you could go with this one.
Yeah, I guess we could use it, because this tragically will be out after our big pig roast event to raise money for our discretionary funds.
We should use this to start conversations
We could both be having multiple conversations around the room until the whole room is talking about this. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's see how it goes. I'm going to put $5 on it. Then I'm going to do it better than you do.
That sounds fair.
So this is from our friends at The Independent.
Okay. That's in England, right?
It is, yes.
Ironic that somebody ruled by like monarchy is named The Independent.
Not very independent.
Just throwing that out there.
Wishful thinking, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, so one of India's holiest temples makes it mandatory for visitors to drink cow urine.
Wow.
Right. And at the start of this headline, visitors, I could not have predicted the end of that headline.
Sure. Every word got weirder as we went through it. Right?
One of India's holiest temples makes it mandatory for visitors.
So does this temple allow, like, I'm assuming this is a Hindu temple. I could be wrong, but I'm assuming. So are, like, non-Hindu people allowed to enter this temple?
Well, so temple management, this is where this is coming from, is temple management, which is a hilarious concept to me for some reason. Like,
I get it.
Are there cubicles? Like, anyway, so temple management says new entry rules meant to keep away non-believers.
Well, it will keep me away.
Yes.
Well done,
sir. I'm not a believer in whatever
is. You did set a standard, and it is achieving its goal.
Right. So just a quick read here. People visiting one of the holiest Hindu temples in India's Himalayan mountains must consume cow urine as a test of faith before they are allowed inside.
Okay.
This is the Gangotri Temple in Uttarakhand.
Nailed it. I'm sure it was great.
I'm sure that's perfect. And it makes it compulsory for every visitor to consume panchgavya.
Which is?
A ritual concoction made from 5 cow-derived products. That's exciting.
5 products,
milk, curd, ghee, honey, and cow urine.
So it's mixed in with other things.
Oh, so that makes it fine.
I mean, it's better than...
Just straight cow urine.
Yeah.
Like cow urine cut with milk and curd.
I'm not going to do it, okay. But it's at least
you're given
better.
A pass-ish.
I'm saying, like, okay, yeah. It makes a little bit more sense. It's a thing.
And the idea, according to the committee mm-hmm. overseeing the shrine, is to
love
keep
it to have a committee.
Non-believers. Of course there's a committee. And the quote here
committee
is
not just for Lutherans anymore.
All right. This is, yeah. The ultimate in game of committees is to make you drink cow urine. This is to keep out non-Sanatani and non-believers from the Gangatari temple. The committee's chair, Dharmendra Simwal. Oh, there's so many names here. The Independent, referring to Sanatandharam, a temple used to describe the traditional form of Hindu belief and practice.
Okay.
True believers will have no problem in consuming it.
He Good said, for them.
Only those entering in disguise with no faith in the religion will have a problem. They won't be allowed. Okay.
Disguise, am I coming in with a mask or just like pretending to have the true faith? Like what were we talking, literal disguises or just is this metaphorical?
Is this a big, like, is there a rash of people sneaking into Hindu temples and then,
I mean,
like what?
I don't know like what, but it could be like if this is a particularly sacred site. I mean, mm-hmm. there are a lot of like sacred Christian sites mm-hmm. where people who are not Christian go, mm-hmm. right? And then like, you can't get in, right, to pay homage to whatever you want to pay homage to because it's like overrun by tourists and what, right. like, you know, the Vatican is not for me a particularly sacred site, but it is a beautiful space that it doesn't matter if you're a Christian or not. You go to see the artwork, you go to see the stuff, yeah. right? And so if you could like keep out all those,
the riffraff,
all the people who weren't
shun like, the non-believers,
right? Which
yes.
I don't think is our intent, but that would be, I would get it, right? Like when I went to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem, mm-hmm. which is where you can see Jesus's, one of the sites of Jesus's possible crucifixion and a tomb, right? Mm-hmm. You can see that. I mean, it's a packed place. Like, you can wait for hours to be in the space that was allegedly Jesus's tomb, right? Mm-hmm. Because this church, and so if you could, if you were a church administrator, right? And yeah. you're like, how do we cut down on this crowd? If you made everybody drink this concoction before they came in, mm-hmm. yeah, it's going to cut
it down
on the crowd.
Yeah.
So well, I don't know. Maybe it was.
You think they're onto something?
I don't think they're onto something, but I could see a place where a practical matter could say this is mm-hmm. already a practice we have. I'm assuming they didn't just come up with
right, this.
So this is already a practice we yeah. have. Let's just make sure that if people are coming, they're coming for the right reason to maintain. Because the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, to me, did not feel holy and sacred because it was just this mass of people moving through a space,
sure.
right? And so if they're trying to maintain a holiness and a sacredness to it, I could see.
Yeah.
We need to do this differently.
Sure.
I don't agree with their method.
Well, there's a quote here that I think is relevant.
Okay.
It says, this is from the guy who is apparently the temple administrator.
Whose name we're not even going to try.
Mr. Simwal.
Okay.
That's his last name. Mr. is first name. this will restore faith and spirituality in people, and those getting a chance to consume it should consider themselves fortunate.
Wow. Okay.
And then this is followed with a picture of a cow in a dress.
I mean, cows are sacred.
Holding
in
a
Hindu
bowl next
religion,
to it,
right?
Which I'm assuming is the cow from which all five cow products are springing.
I mean, that's not a real cow.
That is a real cow.
Oh, no, I see it. Okay, I get it now. No. Where's the body to this cow?
It's laying down on the ground, and it's also in a dress.
Oh, it's like covered. Okay, so it's covered in a cloth, so it looks like it's just a head. Mm-hmm. This is a very deceptive picture. Okay, I'm with you now.
I think it's the angle.
It could be.
Yeah, but this
not a flattering angle for the cow.
Well, yeah. We'll write a note into the editor.
Yeah.
This got me thinking, which was supposed to be your homework a little bit, but mm-hmm. I knew you weren't going to do it, so I did it for you.
You're very gracious.
Yes.
I'm God is smiling
it, like,
upon you today.
Three more times. What are some weird, not just
sure.
a dunk on Hinduism, right? But what
yeah,
are
yeah,
some
no, no,
weird
not.
Rituals that religions have gotten themselves into?
Yeah, including
over
Christianity.
The millennia.
Yeah.
Including, and maybe most notably, Christianity in this list that
okay.
I looked up.
Oh, you got a list. Okay.
I did.
I
yeah.
I love a good list.
So from the 5th through the 10th century, mm-hmm. we'll start here.
So that'd be the 4 through 900s.
Yeah, so pretty early.
Mm-hmm.
There was a group of
post-Constantine.
Monks. Post-Constantine. Pre-microchip.
Also pre-Luther, sure.
Yeah.
Pre-schism, yeah. The schism didn't come until
schism.
The... Yeah.
There's a group of monks called the St. Simeon Stylites. Are you familiar okay. with these guys?
I cannot say that I am.
Okay.
My monk history is lacking these days.
It would have been tough to be very familiar with them because they lived on top of pillars.
I do remember these guys. they'd climb up and they'd spend the rest of their life up on
top
of this
a
thing.
Pillar.
Yeah.
Yeah, and people would relay like food and water mm-hmm. up to them and they just wanted to detach from the world mm-hmm. and contemplate God. So that's...
And they did it on top of a pillar.
On top of a pillar, yeah.
Yeah.
They were on a pedestal.
As I recall, not big pillars. Like
no, little bitty. Like they had to like stand.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm assuming the rest of their lives were not very long.
I don't know. Do you think they fell?
Yeah.
Maybe their balance was really good.
You would hope.
Maybe they're just up there.
That could be like a fun date night to go see if one of the monks falls off of their pillar.
Supermanning it on top of this pillar.
Then there's public flagellation.
Sure.
Which of those of us who have seen the
public
Da Vinci
Code, private, both are practices. Yeah.
Sure. But there were groups of flagellants that would in the 13th, 14th century is when it was most popular.
That's when you're just farting everywhere you go.
Flatulent would be what that is. Surprised you love to say fart on the podcast, honestly.
Really?
You're weird about womb. You don't like to say womb in front of people.
I'm weird about it. That doesn't mean I think it's inappropriate to say. Okay. I'm just
fart. Yeah. Womb.
Fart is great. Yeah. I love a good fart joke.
Anyway, they would march between towns publicly whipping themselves.
Yep, sure.
Somehow to atone for humanity's sins.
Yeah.
Nice thought, I guess. Trying to.
The idea is you're taking on the suffering, like the pain and the suffering. Yeah.
Get us right with God.
P.S. That's what Jesus did for us, so that we don't have to do it. But. Yeah.
This is the weirdest Christian one I could find.
Okay.
And it was popularized in the 14th century.
Okay.
This is the ladies, one for the girls.
Let's get it, ladies.
It's also the weirdest one. Female saints were known to display extreme piety by tending to lepers and then consuming the scabs of the leopards.
Nope.
And licking the wounds.
Nope. That's worse than the cow urine thing.
It's worse. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, that's worse.
That's ucky. Yeah. Yep.
So that was a thing. I'm not really clear on why, other than just they were tending to the lepers.
Sure.
And those were I feel
like we could tend to the lepers without that part.
Without licking any of them.
Yeah.
Like I've never really.
I've never gone to a doctor and thought to myself, I hope my doctor cares for me by licking this thing.
Yeah. My doctor licks me. That'd be great. I don't know. That raises some questions in my mind about Mother Teresa. I'm not going to lie, but.
I don't think this was her practice.
Probably not.
Yeah. I'm pretty
confident. She didn't talk about it if it was.
I'm pretty sure someone would have talked about it.
Right.
If this was a thing that was happening, somebody would have.
To me, this is like, you take that to your grave.
Yeah.
If you're licking lepers, take it to your grave.
Somebody told them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly somebody thought this was an act of great devotion, and so they thought it was worthy of sharing. Yeah. I don't know who that was. I disagree with their decision, but, you know.
Yeah. Then I found a weird Buddhist one.
Okay.
Just to throw it in there and round it out a little bit. You know, Judaism, I feel like we can make a strong argument about the foreskin situation. That's a weird ritual. And, you know, there's a myriad of religions in the world. We're going to keep it to the more mainstream ones.
Okay.
But Buddhism, there is a practice, which I think is a fringe practice in Buddhism.
I'm guessing most of these are fringe practices. I don't think any of these were ever like...
One hopes, yeah.
Yeah.
Where they self-mummify, the monks do, while they are alive.
Okay, self-mummify.
Yeah,
all right.
So it's like a 6-year process, and it's like several years spent consuming a diet only of like these seeds and this bark from this tree.
Okay.
And then
that slowly mummifies you from the inside
out?
Yes,
and then there's another year where you drink this tea that apparently is almost like a boat lacquer. And so you drink it like along with this diet. So you've got like no body fat on you for one thing, right? And then you drink this tea for several years. It's like a boat lacquer. And then like once you've done that for years, you like put yourself in a tomb.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they like there's a little like air hole and they ring the bell every day to let people know they're alive. They have no food or water, right? And then at some point they stop ringing the bell. They seal up the tomb. And then sometime later they exhume them and the body is fully mummified and the idea is that you have then transcended into a living Buddha.
Wow.
If you pull this off.
Okay.
And
because you've rejected everything to such an extent that you've achieved
you've pickled
enlightenment.
Yourself, yes.
Mummified. You eat pickles. You don't eat mummies.
That we know of.
I'm pretty confident.
People out there licking lepers. So.
All right. So let's see. Any others that we can think of? I mean, let's see. Stigmatas. Are you familiar with stigmatas?
No, it's a stigmata.
So stigmata is this idea that it was in the Catholic tradition that people can get like they get a wound and it's not that you get an actual wound, but it's like it appears, right? And it's a wound that appears as the holes of Jesus in your hands. So you get a wound in your hands that appears as if it's the wounds of Jesus, but it like appears mysteriously. You don't know where it comes from. So that's a thing. There's also, I think it's in Polynesia. I can't say this for sure, but somewhere Pacific Island-ish area where I believe there's a group of Christians who will actually crucify someone in the remembrance of Jesus' death, but not to the, like, they'll take them off before they die, yeah. but they will put the actual, like, nails through hands, nails through feet, like,
holy
they'll
moly.
They'll do the nails, but they yeah. they don't die.
Yeah.
Like, they take them off before they die, allegedly.
Do you sign up for that, or is it, like...
Never looked into it. Yeah. Can't say, one way or the other. Yeah. There are a lot of weird things that people do in the name of religion.
Yeah. There was the whole Inquisition as well that... I feel like we could talk about for a long time, but
we could. Yeah. I mean, forcing confessions and then, torturing people to
torturing
get it,
people,
torturing people to get them to believe in your faith. Cause that's what Jesus
that
commanded us
works.
To do.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it does sometimes work in that sometimes people will say it to get you to stop torturing them. So if your goal is a verbal confession, I guess it achieves that.
Yeah.
I don't know that it has changed anyone's faith, but
anyway, so
I'm not,
pig roast.
I'm
I
not
hear.
Pro confession or pro torture. Just to be clear, I'm not. Yeah, not bringing back the Inquisition.
No,
but
I
no one
hear.
Ever. No one ever expects the Spanish Inquisition. It's,
no one ever expects it.
That's a line from I think Monty Python. I can't. No one expects the. Anyway, I can't remember what it's from now. Somebody out there will know. Write in, listeners. You can tell me.
Write in,
you know,
listeners, and I want to hear a room full of conversations about drinking cow urine at pig roast.
Maybe it should be pig urine. I don't know. What? I mean. Yeah, is there like a weird thing that we would do today to keep people out?
To keep people out from like church?
Yeah. Not that I want to keep people
I mean,
out, but like
I'm
what
sure
would
we
be...
have to do anything weird to keep people out of church. It's weird enough.
All right, well, we're going to jump right into our article here. And so this article comes from Relevant, one that's been sitting in our hopper for a little while. Mm-hmm. It's called The Problem with Calling Everything a Spiritual Battle by Jocelyn Adams. So Jocelyn's going to start by sharing her story. Says she was 22 and crying in my car in a church parking lot when my small group leader called. I don't know if that's a pastor or just a
probably not small group leader.
Yeah,
that's a volunteer position.
Yeah, I like to imagine that maybe this person has some sort of training, but probably not.
Probably
not ordained. Probably not an advanced theological.
Yeah,
group.
I'm just gonna go with worst case scenario.
Fair enough. So this person talks to Jocelyn in this moment when she's crying in her car in this really low moment, and she will later go on to say like in a moment of mental health crises, right?
Sure.
And the small group leader says to her some form of, sounds like this is a time when you really just need to lean in. I think you need to fast. I think you need to pray and just fight the spiritual battle, right? Like you just really need to lean into the battle.
You know what usually helps your mental state is no food.
I don't believe that the small group leader was a trained professional therapist. So
or nutritionist.
Or also possible. Yeah. But so Jocelyn shares the story and says, this did not help, right? Like I'd done all the things. I had done it before. I did it again. It did not fix
it. Like the most predictable thing in the world.
It's up there.
Yeah.
But so she goes off and then shares like in a few months, I was in a therapist's office and within a couple sessions, the therapist had identified these past traumas that I had unresolved. They had given me tools to help cope with these things. Prayer was still a critical part of my journey, but it was not seen as the only solution. And she goes on to describe it from there, right? And the premise that Jocelyn is setting up for us here is the dangers of identifying everything, right? Every little thing that we wrestle with as a spiritual battle that can only be fought in a spiritual realm. And I think conversely, the piece that we can bring to the conversation is what is the danger of saying that nothing is a spiritual battle, of treating everything as only of this world, if that makes sense. So that's going to be our little lemon twist on the martini of this episode, if you will.
Do you drink martinis?
No.
Okay.
Do you?
No, it just feels obvious you don't drink martinis. Neither one of us drinks martinis. We don't know what we're talking about.
You put lemon twists on martinis sometimes.
Sure.
I mean, not...
I think.
I think dirty ones have the olive juice in them.
Ugh.
And traditionally, I think olives go in a martini. But I think you can get
a
martini with a lemon twist. I think you can get that. I think that's what James Bond orders.
Shaken, not stirred. It's a Vesper.
I think with a twist, Anyway.
Calls it a Vesper. Anyway, it's very romantic.
It is. In that
version. And then she gets, like, blown up, but...
Does she get blown up? I think she drowns.
Does she?
Yeah.
Oh.
She's in the elevator. Anyway. Yeah.
Okay. The building gets blown up and she drowns.
The building collapses and she drowns. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, this is the James Bond with Daniel Craig.
Spoilers.
The first one.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Casino Royale.
That's the one. If any of you came here, for your James Bond information.
Right.
Sorry. Just ruined that one. Yeah. All right. So, but here's the deal. We came from different upbringings, right?
We did. Yeah. You were Lutheran all the way.
I was Lutheran all the way. You were not. Your other things.
Yeah.
So I think it's maybe helpful for us to start from, again, where did we come up? So if you're thinking back to your history of like, what did my childhood, my upbringing teach me about either spiritual warfare or about mental health? Where are you coming from? What does that look like for you?
Yeah. Like, so I think that there was not really much of an emphasis on either one. I didn't grow up Southern Baptist. I know I've talked about this a lot. I went to a Southern Baptist college. So that was like a later.
You're converted to Southern Baptist.
I did not. You shut your mouth. Do not start that rumor.
I'm just fighting words.
I'm so mad at you right now. I did not convert to Southern Baptist.
No, you did not. I'm sorry.
Did not. I did go to a Southern Baptist school.
Yeah.
For all 4 years. I did not at any point leave when I could have.
Got the degree. Got the t-shirt.
Got the degree. Got out. Now I get the letters about donating money. It's great.
Oh, there you go.
And I say no. Anyway, so I grew up Presbyterian before
that. Is that what
that.
You say when we send you letters too?
Just yeah, I rip them up.
All letters about donating
while
money.
I'm cackling, no. Yes.
Carry on, sorry. Yeah.
Anyway, and Presbyterians, like in my point of view, like the Southern Baptists, they really love the spiritual warfare thing, right? Like that was new for me when I, among many things, when I like encountered that at a Southern Baptist school. Presbyterians, I feel like we're not comfortable talking about anything. Like it just wasn't just perpetually a little bit uncomfortable with stuff. So there wasn't really much of an emphasis placed on spiritual warfare, which I think in some ways was maybe more healthy than like an extreme emphasis being put on it. I will say probably partially just my own stuff that I bring to the table and my upbringing, I have not had a whole lot of room in my personal theology for spiritual warfare.
Interesting. Yeah.
I kind of swing a little bit harder the other direction.
I get that.
As opposed to, you know, like if there's two, you know, like opposing into your
if we're
like,
on a spectrum,
if we're always in a spiritual conflict would be one way down here, right? I'm more on the other end of the spectrum.
Where you're leaning towards we're almost never in a spiritual
conflict. Almost never in a spiritual conflict. Yeah. It's just kind of where I tend to fall. So yeah, I think this is probably an interesting conversation between the two of us. So.
Yeah. So I think my upbringing, probably similar. We did not talk about it, right? In that sense, it was not like every sermon was about spiritual warfare. I think if we talked about if I'm like thinking back to my youth and if I'm thinking about any sort of spiritual battle, it would be like going back to what we talked about with the atonement episode and how the crucifixion works, right? The spiritual battle was always a notion of it's the battle that Jesus won on our behalf, right?
So
if there's a spiritual battle, it's the one that Jesus has won, that death has been defeated, and that all cosmic powers bow before God, right? And so we're freed from whatever spiritual battle might be going on. We're freed from it.
Yeah.
Would have been how it was presented, if at all, right?
Yeah.
Mental health, and for me, I can say for sure, I don't remember a period of my youth where it was like, this is when we're going to talk about mental health. I do know that I had conversations with my parents about it at various points because we knew people. When I was in high school, there was a woman at in our congregation who had been one of my Sunday school teachers who died by suicide, very sadly. And so I remember our congregation. I remember her kids, who are now grown adults, but I remember her kids going through that grief process. And like we had a counselor come in and talk to our youth group and stuff like that, and like provide that space. So I think like reflecting on it, I think more healthy than not as far as how my church treated it, but definitely would not have leaned into it. Like no one in the room was like, well, she died because she lost a spiritual battle. Like that was never but there are places where
there
like
are places
that would be the line. So I am thankful for that. I'm not thankful for the way my congregation handled a very tragic experience, not thankful for the experience itself. So I think that's where we're coming from, and so we're probably landing somewhere similar to where Jocelyn is pointing us to, but I think it's okay to acknowledge there are a lot of places where this is, everything is a spiritual battle. And I do remember my first encounter with this. This was a non-denominational youth group that was outside of my congregation that I was participating in. And somebody started talking to me about IHOP. And as far as I was concerned, IHOP was the International House of Pancakes.
Sure.
Which we did not have any around us, right? We had Waffle Houses and we had a couple of the great breakfast places, but we did not have IHOPs. They just didn't exist in our region. And so I was very confused. Like, why is this person talking about IHOP? And then they kept going on about how IHOP is in, I think, St. Louis. I don't know. Somewhere central states-ish. They're like this beautiful place. And they kept going on about why is this person so obsessed about pancakes? There was apparently, I don't know if it still exists.
It's the International House of Prayer.
It is the International House of
I've
Prayer.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Yeah. And so it's a place where, at least at the time, I assume it's still going because it sounds like the thing that would keep going, where people are praying 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Which in one sense, I'm like, oh, that's really cool. Like, there's a place where people are praying 24/7. But the notion of it is not that just they're praying, but they're praying because there's a spiritual battle happening.
Yeah.
And the way to win it is to have people praying 24/7.
Boots on the ground.
Right. And so they're called prayer warriors, right? Ooh, and so this is where I started hearing language of, like, prayer as a battle and, like, prayer warrior. And like, and then there are people who are, like, identify as, like, well, I'm a prayer warrior. Like, this is something that's a spiritual gift of mine, is to be a prayer warrior. And it's not that I'm inherently against the notion of someone having a gift of prayer, right? I think a spiritual gift of, like, I understand how to pray and how to communicate in this way with God. I think that could very well be a spiritual gift for some people.
Yeah, I'm open to it.
Yeah, I'm open to that as a spiritual gift. Yeah. The notion of prayer warrior, I'm struggling with a little bit more, right? And continue to ever since then. And so I think that was kind of my first exposure to this idea of, like, okay, you think that everything that's going on is like, so there's no human factor here.
Right.
It's just spirit, and how do we fight the other spirit, as opposed to this person's hungry and I have food and I can give them. No, I have to pray over the spirit that's keeping this person hungry. I'm like, well, how about I take action to feed the person because they don't have any food, right? And there was like that, it wasn't inherently a conflict, but it did not sit well with me even at that point, if that makes sense.
Right. I mean, I think there's the very obvious thing to me is there's a tendency to want to address a spirit that is oppressing somebody instead of a system that is oppressing somebody. Because one feels easier than the other.
Yeah, because I can't see the spirit.
Right. And one absolves you of responsibility.
It does. So. I'm not responsible for a spirit, right?
Right.
We have a policy. We have a system in place, but the spirit's the one that's causing this problem. Sure.
Yeah.
I don't have to vote differently than I want to. I don't have to act differently or purchase differently or spend differently. Right? Yeah.
Or lobby differently or argue differently or, you know, show up differently in my daily life.
Right. I just have to be a prayer warrior.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really healthy and really helpful point. And so, you know, to Jocelyn's point, right, there is this real danger when we start to see everything as a spiritual battle, right? And hers is particular around mental health. Obvious dangers there. Real mental health crises go undiagnosed. And so people who need the tools that I firmly believe God has given us to care for our mental health, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that these things are just like man-made hogwash, right? You know, I think we have very real tools that have practical ways in which we can, I think, even to some extent trace them back to principles that we see in the Bible. Right? Mm-hmm. I don't think every treatment that we have has to have a biblical source for it. But I think there are ways in which we can see this kind of lines up. This kind of makes sense compared to what Jesus was teaching or what Jesus was talking about. Right. Yeah. I think we can see some of that in modern treatments. And so people who need help don't get help. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true for mental health. I think it's true for physical health. I think it's true for, you know, as you were mentioning, right, people who are hungry, people who are experiencing homelessness, right? When we can say everything's a spiritual battle, then nothing is actually our responsibility.
Right.
Yeah. And maybe that's really the greatest danger. The danger is, like, when I see everything as a spiritual battle, I have no responsibility in it.
Right. And not
I get
even
to absolve myself.
Not even that you have no responsibility of it, but that you don't even acknowledge the way that you're benefiting from the systems that are oppressing other people, right? Right. Like, it's not just like, oh, I am responsible for this person's hunger, right? Mm-hmm. Or homelessness. Maybe you're not probably directly, but you are benefiting from a system that is.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
At least unless the odds are good that you are.
Unless you're also hungry and homeless.
Unless you're also hungry and homeless.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably if you're in the position to think about how to help somebody who's hungry and homeless, you are benefiting from a system that is contributing to that person's hunger.
So if you're confronted with someone who either thinks they're in a spiritual battle, maybe that's too much of a mental health crisis. Maybe that's not the right question. If you're confronted with someone who sees everything as a spiritual battle, how do you as a person of faith respond to them?
Block them. I don't. That's not very nice.
Let's imagine that's also a joke-ish. Let's imagine that you are going to engage in a conversation, a healthy conversation, or you're going to aim for a healthy conversation with this person. What might be some tricks, does not sound right, but what might be some tools that you could bring into that conversation to have a healthy conversation with them?
It really depends, I think, on how committed that person is to that line of thinking, right? Because there's going to be a point where somebody is so committed to this whole like ethos that you cannot reach each other on that, right? Yeah. You can still have a healthy conversation and be kind to each other about different things. So, you know, maybe steering away from that is a way to have a healthy conversation with somebody, right? But if, and I'm thinking about, like, I know somebody who is convinced, like absolutely convinced, and went on a tirade about how when Asheville, North Carolina flooded a couple years ago, it was because God was trying to drown all the gays.
Okay.
In Asheville, which my understanding is the LGBTQ population in Asheville is not the one who suffered the casualties. Right. So, you know, interesting hot take on a lot of fronts.
Sure. Well, it's like after Katrina when people said it was because of the sins of Bourbon Street, and Bourbon Street was one of the few areas.
It was
of
like above
untouched.
Water. Yeah. It was like, great.
Maybe we missed. Yeah.
Whoops. So like, I am not going to be able to have a healthy conversation with this person about that, right? Yeah, because the framework that he is approaching that from is completely different and foreign to me, right? Mm-hmm. And me being like, well, why do you think God would want to punish homosexuality to begin with? Like, let's start there, right? Like, the why of things. I think we diverge earlier than that.
Well, and
you know?
I think there is a distinction here between, like, okay, this is an action where God is punishing, and the distinction of, like, you're experiencing a demonic possession or a spiritual battle that God wants to fight for you. Like, God wants to fight on your behalf. But, but you have this spiritual battle, and that's causing your depression, or you have this demonic thing, and that's causing your OCD, right? And so I think there is a distinction there. I hear what you're saying. Like, I would have a really hard time having a conversation, like entering into the conversation faithfully with someone who had the stance that you're describing too. And I might have a really hard time entering into this conversation. But I do think there's a distinction between, oh, this action is taken because God is punishing X group, right? And, oh, there's a spiritual battle, and that's causing your suffering.
Right. Yeah.
I just think they're different. I'm not saying either one is
right.
They
are different. You're right. They are different. I think to me this gets a little bit into the weeds of like, what do we believe is metaphor and what do we believe is literal?
Okay.
Right? Which is, you know, that's always kind of messy when you start talking about that. And I think, you know, there's, it seems to me that most of the people who are very heavy on spiritual warfare are biblical literalists as well.
Sure.
So like I can kind of pinpoint there that that's maybe where we diverge in thought, right? Is like, I am not a biblical literalist, right?
Sure.
So just from the jump, I think that there's lots of things in the Bible that are metaphorical. I think that it's not all meant to be written literally, and there's different types of literature in the Bible. And so if I'm talking to somebody who is a biblical literalist and says all of this is fact and history recorded, then that's a pretty easy place to say, oh, that's where we're going sideways with each other, you know? And then, you know, maybe there's room to have a conversation about that, right?
Probably not. But yeah, I appreciate the effort to get to that point.
Right.
So I'm going to read this quote from Jocelyn's article, and I think this is kind of a helpful framework for us too, right? She's been sharing her story a little bit, so she gets to a point. She says, I'm not arguing against prayer. I pray constantly, and I believe God moves in ways that defy clinical explanation, but I also believe that the same God who knit me together in my mother's womb, quoting the Psalms there, that this God understands neurology, and that the same Spirit who intercedes for us also works through the therapist who finally helped me see the thought pattern I'd been stuck in since I was nine. And I think this is the framework that I think is really helpful for us, right? That the tools we have are also gifts from God. And maybe it is that your therapist is helping you fight a spiritual battle. I think that's an okay framework to have, as long as the framework is not my only avenue for this is fasting, is prayer, is like if my avenue is I've got this spiritual thing going on, and a therapist has tools that I can use, and prayer has tools that I can use, and, you know, maybe even a clinical prescription has tools that I can use, right?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily see that as unhealthy, as long as we're willing to use all of the tools that I believe God has put into our... Now, I don't think most people get there, right?
Yeah, but, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I would say it's unhealthy or not, because to me, I start to think, well, what are we defining as spiritual versus what is, you have something in your brain that is very much like a physical chemical thing that's happening. And like, how helpful is that to frame that as spiritual? What do we mean when we say something is spiritual, right? Like what?
Yeah. Well, in some ways I'm thinking back to our conversation with an exorcist, which is one of my favorite phrases to be able to throw around.
I know. I love it.
And I'm thinking about the way, I mean, he had very clearly had a process to like identify mental health distinct from possession, right? That there were things that they did to kind of set that apart. So I don't know that I mean by this, everything is demon possession and you just have different tools. Like that's not what I mean. But I do think that we can frame it as this is affecting my spiritual health. And if we think of the spiritual battle as how do I'm trying to have a relationship with God. What are the forces that are standing in my way of having that relationship that the way that I want them to, or the way that I want to, and how do I wrestle with that? How do I fight with that? And that's where I'm coming from, I guess.
I like that more. I think it gives people more agency, right? Because saying something as a spiritual battle is, it lacks agency.
I see that.
You say, well, oh, these are forces at work that, you know, I neither see nor hear nor understand that are duking it out over me, you know, that, what are you supposed to do with that versus saying, I would like this thing in my life, whether it is your spiritual relationship with God or other things even, right? And something about my mental health, my mental state, where I am, my life right now is a block to me experiencing
that.
What can I do? How do I reach this goal, right? Yeah. Like that to me feels much better and like a much more productive approach to something than just saying, well, it's a spiritual battle and maybe I've got some tools to help me, you know.
So, well, I think what you're describing there, right, I think it's the difference between me self-identifying, I've got this spiritual thing going on, and you putting on me, I think you're going through a spiritual battle. And
I think you've got a demon. I've been meaning to talk to you about this.
Regardless, this demon's crushing it. All right.
Right.
I know, but like it is the agency. It's right. It's me self-identifying. How am I going to move through this thing that I'm wrestling with versus you saying you've got a spiritual battle and you need to pray about it. You need to fast and like forcing that piece on. Like I think the agency is there. And I think that's a really helpful framework to utilize for that.
Well, I think, you know, maybe a gripe that I have with
only one.
No, a gripe.
Oh, a gripe.
A singular gripe that I have with Christianity in general is kind of our lack of agency in the way that we talk about things, right? And I'm not saying like us, right? Yeah. Or even
not these Christians.
Not you know, I'm not trying
not all
to
Christians, Elise.
blame anybody in particular, right? But I have heard so many times this emphasis on like, well, let go and let God and like, you know, all, God will fix it and you just need to pray and like let God work and all this stuff. And I'm like, but where is your agency in this?
Yeah.
Like, and to me, like I do actually read the Bible some.
What?
And what I see is a lot of being the hands and feet of God. And to me, that's agency, right? Like that is, we are here to make stuff happen, you know, and that to me doesn't look like, you know, just waiting on a spiritual battle to play out over you, you know, like, and just where, I guess, where is, does our choice come in? Where does our ability to make things happen come in? Like, where is that in Christianity? It seems somewhat absent from the conversation.
Yeah, I think that's a fair critique. I think the when I think about the alternative pull, right? So we have the pull of everything's a spiritual battle, and then we have the pull of there is no spiritual battle, right? Which you self-identify as leaning towards, right?
Leaning towards. Not all the way in. I've got at least a foot in.
Yeah, yeah. But you're leaning towards. And so like as I think about like the risks of that, I think we do miss places where things that we don't understand are at work.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And it does. Maybe battle is the wrong language, but I think we negate places of like there's a spiritual realm that we don't understand. And I think there is a healthy way to acknowledge there's a spiritual realm that we don't understand, and those things are at work around us all the time. And how does that play out? And what does that look like? And I know my own journey, right, has been one from kind of never thinking about it at all as a kid, because you're a kid, what do you know, right? To having that like, okay, here's this prayer warrior IHOP, it's not barely pancakes, right? That experience, and be like, I'm not really sure what that looks, and resisting pretty hard against that, and getting into college, and in college, and even into seminary, being like, that's all, it's all just mental health, right? Like you look at this, the stuff in the Bible, like it's just people wrestling with mental health, and it's not demon, because demons aren't real, it's just mental health, right? And coming out of seminary and coming into the congregation, doing more reading, doing more research, and really kind of identifying there are forces at work in this world, right? And it's not even a biblical literist, right? Within the realm of biblical metaphor, just being willing to acknowledge we don't have to think that it's just God God, you know, Father, Son, Spirit, all just existing without any other sort of spiritual existence, right? Mm-hmm. There are other, the Bible to me, whether you want to talk about it as metaphor or not, the Bible to me seems to indicate that there are other spiritual forces at work in mm-hmm. this world. And some of those forces are opposed to God and to the work of people who are trying to be with God. And I don't think that's just Christians. Mm-hmm. I think that's people who are trying to do God's will on this earth. I think there are things that oppose them. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that necessarily shows up in the form of like mental health, but I think there are like roadblocks to get in people's way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that the agency has been really helpful. And so for me to enter into a place of conflict and to say, okay, I know, I feel like something is standing in my way in the mm-hmm. midst of this. I feel like this is where God is leading me. God is leading our congregation, whatever, mm-hmm. but something is standing in our way. What is my role in this? And prayer is a part of that. Conversation is a part of that. Planning and preparation is a part of that. Mm-hmm. But that has been, so I think I probably lean further towards that like middle spot, which mm-hmm. is very much my Lutheran stance in all things.
And
right?
It's like, yeah, kind of it's my go-to. Solidly in the middle. Yeah.
I like to sit on a fence. What can I say?
Yeah. It's like not safe, but it's safe.
Yeah. Oh. Well, the spiritual realm is not safe.
Right.
And I think there is something to like, I just have to acknowledge I don't understand it. And so right. if I have this conversation with someone who says everything is a spiritual battle, I'm probably going to say like, listen, I hear that. I hear that you feel like everything is a spiritual battle, but mm-hmm. I also feel like God has given us tools.
Yeah.
Like I feel like medicine and therapy and practices and policies are mm-hmm. all tools that God can give God's people to, if you want to think about it, to fight a spiritual battle or to just practically
yeah.
execute this thing, right? And so I think that's how I enter into the mm-hmm. conversation. I don't know that it's right, but it at least to me has felt empowering.
Yeah.
It has also felt like a way to bridge between these two poles, because I don't think we have to reject the spiritual world all the way. I don't think that's helpful for us, and I don't think we need to live in the place of mental health is a myth and it's just demon possession. Like, I think we can find somewhere
it's
in between.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a comedian whose name I'm not going to be able to remember right now. Maybe one of our listeners knows it, or maybe you know it. But
depends on what we're quoting, but we'll see.
He is Christian,
male
I believe.
Comedian, male Christian. Okay.
Yeah, I believe he's Catholic, but he, I think does actually a randomly really beautiful job summing up okay. some of this for somebody who's a comedian too.
Yeah.
But he talks about how at the end of the day, he believes in a metaphor for a mystery, right?
Mm, okay.
And that's a lot of how I come to the Bible and spirituality, right? Is like, yeah. I think, you know, that so much of this, even at times where it is also literal, can also be metaphor.
Yeah,
and
sure.
it is
yeah.
for a mystery that yeah. none of us fully understand, right? And so like, when I hear about spiritual, and I think you're right, the Bible does indicate that there are forces that are trying to work against good in the world. Mm-hmm. And I hear that and I process some of that and I think how much of that is just stuff that we as humans have brought to the table too.
Totally legit.
Right?
Yep.
Like, and so I think that there's room there for it to be, it can be a negative spiritual force and mm-hmm. still be self-created.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? Like,
yeah.
I don't know that I believe in a literal demon. Like, you know, like, yeah.
But,
but
I
think
what if
it's
we think
still
of like,
in line.
Yeah. What if you think of like racism as
right.
a spiritual force? That
for
like,
sure.
How
like,
do we fight against this thing?
A force of darkness.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. yeah.
Maybe not the right language. Yeah, but I hear you. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can edit that out. What I mean by that.
We understand. That's yeah. right.
Way to make that awkward.
I'm here for that.
There's going to be two rumors today from this podcast. One, Elise converted to Southern Baptist. Two, she's a racist.
My job here is done.
Right. Thank you. You're a force of evil.
On this episode, yeah. I can't argue with that.
You're no longer God's favorite.
Okay. Yeah. Anything else? Other closing thoughts? I think this has been really helpful.
Not really. Yeah.
Yeah. Agency is good. Identifying, you know, finding a therapist is good.
It's good. Yeah, definitely. If you don't have a therapist, maybe think about getting one.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Great things to have.
Therapists are great. Spiritual yeah. directors are really good. Spiritual directors are not going to tell you to just pray about it. Like really
yeah.
good spiritual directors are
going
to
say that.
Is that
just a thing for pastors though?
No, totally not.
Oh, my insurance cover it?
Probably not.
Probably not.
But actually most spiritual directors work with people on a very, very, very sliding scale.
Interesting.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I mean, but all of these like, how do you move through this life, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're trying to figure out. And really good spiritual directors will point you to therapy when you need therapy, right?
Yeah.
And they might say like, hey, let's sit with this. Let's meditate on this. Let's mm-hmm. pray about this, right? But they're also going to say like, yeah, you need to see a doctor. Like
yeah.
this is beyond what we're doing. And God has
right.
tools. Right? A really good one's going to do those things for you.
Good.
Just as a good pastor would do and a good small group leader. Jocelyn, I'm sorry. That was not your experience.
Right.
A good small group leader would do those things for you too. So
yeah.
get help. God has given us tools to get help.
Yep.
Modern medicine is a tool of God. Yeah. There you go.
There we go. That's the manifesto right there.
There it is. That and ivermectin. No, wait, not
no.
that one. Are we bringing that back?
No.
Is that still a thing?
People swallowing ivermectin for COVID?
Yeah. Does people still do? Is that still something that people think?
I imagine that pool has gotten smaller and smaller.
Fair enough. All right. Well, hey, that's all we've got on this week's episode. So if you liked what we're talking about, send us in your thoughts. And I asked a question earlier. What was it that people were supposed to send in? Something about, I don't know.
I don't know, but I want to hear about if you happen to know of any weird religious traditions. Sure, there you go.
If you
throughout
have a,
the ages.
If you know of a weird religious tradition or if you have ever participated in a weird religious tradition,
right.
We are here for it. So you can send those to beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. Find all of our episodes at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.